Hey, it's Tony and Jenny Brewski from Real Ghost Stories Online. If you like this show, please consider helping us keep it on the air by becoming an EPP, that's an extra podcast person. You get a ton of bonus episodes and a brand new one every single week and exclusive video content as well.
It's only $5 a month and you can sign up at realghoststoriesonline.com.
Without our EPPs, this show could not go on, and our expenses to keep the show going continue to go up. So if you like it and you want it to continue into the future, please consider signing up at realghoststoriesonline.com. Get all of those exclusives. I can guarantee you will absolutely love them.
Thanks for helping keep Real Ghost Stories Online on the air.
If you're already an EPP, thank you so much for the support. If you're not and you've been thinking about signing up, please do so now and allow us to continue to do this show for you every single day. Sign up to be an EPP on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. And thank you so much for the support.
Welcome to Real Ghost Stories Online. Call in your real ghost story now at 855-853-4802 or write in at realghoststoriesonline.com. You are about to enter the world of the unknown and quite possibly the undead. This is Real Ghost Stories Online.
And on today's episode of Real Ghost Stories Online, a listener sets out with friends to debunk an urban legend. And what she experiences, she still cannot explain 30 years later. Customers cannot seem to reach the business they're calling, but instead, they're reaching someone from another time. A child finds she knows the exact layout of a town that she has not visited except in her nightmares. And a couple rents an apartment and finds that both of their mothers are uneasy with their new home. But what they find out later explains it all. Those stories, your calls, and more today on Real Ghost Stories Online. Tony and Jenny Brewski joining you once again. Hello.
Hello.
And how are you this fine day?
I'm good. How are you?
I am doing well. These sound like interesting tales today.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to hear about the one with the dream where the lady explores the area or had it in her dream and then actually sees it, I'm assuming, or something of that nature?
Yes, actually sees it. It sounds kind of like how you dream of places.
Yeah. I was just going to say that. That's really what kind of comes to my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I have dreams of I think they're just variations on existing cities that then I'm getting kind of spooky-ized in my mind.
Spooky-ized?
Spooky-ized. That's my new word for the day.
Okay.
Just made that up right here.
Okay.
Spookified. Is that better?
I don't know.
It's like the original town, and then it gets creepy and spooky in my dreams.
Okay.
And there's like new buildings and buildings that do exist are not what they are in reality. Anyway, I tend to visit them on regular basis. Or even like I'll have a dream 5 years ago about wandering through some city, and then 5 years later or something, I'm back there again. It's like, I know I've been here before, and I'll wake up and I'll consciously be able to say, I did dream about that place. I know I did, but it was so long ago. And there I'm back there again. It's like it's this little village.
You're just astral projecting yourself everywhere.
I don't know if it's astral. Do you think that's what it is? You think these towns exist somewhere and I'm just kind of conjuring them up in my mind and just becoming a ghost to them?
Maybe.
It'd be very interesting. Because some of these towns are really scary.
Okay.
Like, I would not want to ever really, really be there.
Okay.
We can talk more about that a little bit, but some of the fine locations that you can visit in Tony's brain, like Nightmare Before Christmas. But anywho, 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. I have a few more stories, actually, too, mainly about the place that we stayed in a haunted location.
Yes.
When we were on our trip the other day, and we'll talk about that in a little bit, another Northern Michigan experience.
Mm-hmm.
Creepy, creepy stuff. I'm looking forward to sharing.
Okay, good.
So, anyhow, 855-853-4802 is our phone number. Of course, you can write it on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. And as you may or may not know, the EPP website is now up and running. You can become, and when you become an EPP, you get access to a whole other website now with all of the past EPP episodes on there, bonus video content up there, and more. And it's going to be added to even more frequently than just the once a week with the bonus episode. That's certainly going to continue to go up there. But there's going to be more and more extra EPP stuff that goes up. So it's a good time to become an EPP when you sign up on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. Click Become an EPP, and it will take you to sign up and enjoy $5 a month. That is what keeps our show on the air and allows this this ship to stay a sail. So please consider supporting. Let's kick off the show today with a letter. It comes into us from Hope. It says, "Hey, Tony and Jenny, this is Hope from Chicago. During the last half of class today, instead of doing anything productive, we somehow ended up having a discussion on ghosts and the paranormal. I've had a few paranormal experiences in my life. Apparently, so have many of my classmates and even my teacher. The story I'm going to share with you belongs to my classmate's boyfriend. So her boyfriend works at a tattoo shop. The shop is in the older building in downtown Chicago. Part of her boyfriend's job is to answer the phone and schedule the appointments. Over the first few weeks of his job, many times he had several customers tell him the same story. Customers claimed they had called this exact number several times, only to be answered by a woman named Rose. The woman would explain they had the wrong place and that this was a convenience store, not a tattoo parlor. Thinking something was wrong with the phone line, the boyfriend informed his boss of the problem. The boss had the phones checked, and the phone company could find no explanation for why their calls were being directed to another number. When the logical explanations were ruled out, the boss did some digging into the history of the building. And sure enough, the building used to be a convenience store, and the owner's wife was named Rose. Could this be a residual haunting? The ghost of this woman might be unaware that she has passed and continues to do her job. Could this possibly be some kind of overlap in time? Either way, I found the story fascinating, especially since it happened so recently. Anyway, love the podcast. Keep the goosebumps coming."
You could try and explain that one away if the phone company hadn't gotten involved and said that they had no explanation as to why that was going on.
Sure.
Because my initial thought was, well, maybe that number's being forwarded on to their new gas station or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds like that was from quite a while ago.
Interesting coincidence there with the name of the woman,
mm-hmm.
the type of store that it was and where they thought they were calling to. I mean, you could, you know, say, well, maybe they just dialed a wrong digit and it went to a convenience store with someone named Rose working at it.
Mm-hmm.
The only way to, I mean, I guess really to verify that part would be actually to look at the phone record of the calling out person,
mm-hmm.
and saying what number, you know, seeing where it dialed.
Sure.
What digits did they actually press, and then cross-referencing, and then if it does match up, then you certainly have something very paranormal on your hands.
Well, but it's multiple people that have had that happen.
That's true.
So.
The only thing, I can... And I'm not trying to debunk this because I think it probably is paranormal.
Mm-hmm.
But you could say, well, maybe it could happen to multiple people if, you know, their digit is one off.
Mm-hmm.
And it does keep going to the, you know, it's a, people commonly misdial the specific number for whatever
sure.
reason. Because that does happen. But I don't know. There's a lot of coincidences there.
There are. And just too many.
And it makes you wonder, I mean, could that be a medium, too, that's if something wants to communicate, it's a good way to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Over the phone, you know, electronically, if you're a ghost, that's kind of what you use a lot of times is some sort of medium like that to communicate through. And what better way to do that?
Right.
As far as why it's doing it, I don't know. But it'd be interesting to what type of conversation you could have with Rose if you ever get her on the line.
Yeah.
Can you explain your address? Explain what's going on in the store. What year is it?
Where are you located?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those sort of things. And, now that would be creepy.
Uh-huh.
Like, well, sir, it's 1958. Oh God. And I'm Scott Bakula.
Quantum Leap.
I will be coming to visit you soon. Very good story. 855-853-4802. That's our number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost story with us. Be sure to press subscribe too on whatever platform you're listening to us on. iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Spotify,
mm-hmm.
you name it. we're probably there. And when you press subscribe, you don't miss any episodes. It helps us climb those charts as well. And we thank you for that in advance. Gina writes in, "Hi, Tony and Jenny. Love the show. Listen every day at work. I'm a happy EPP." Thank you, Gina. "I wrote into the show before. It was a story where I made the deal with the ghost not to use the back bedroom of my apartment. My story today took place when I was 4 years old. My grandmother and I were at my cousin's birthday party. They lived out of the country. The street that they lived on was over a mile long. Before you'd get out to the main road, there had been snow in the forecast for the evening, and we lived in upstate New York at the time. The snow started to fall pretty heavy, and we needed to get home before it got worse. My grandmother and I said goodbye to everyone, and we were getting in the car, and I could tell my gram was very nervous because the snow was coming down very heavy and fast now. We started down the road, and before we got to the end of the road, it was almost blizzard-like, and we went off the road into a ditch. I jumped out of the car, and my grandmother, seeing this, ran around the other side to get me. We saw headlights coming towards where we were, and they stopped on the road right above the ditch. A man in a large truck rolled down his window and asked if we were okay and told us to get in. We did. Back then, it didn't seem as scary to receive help from someone stopping in a car or truck as it would be today. It was very nice, and he dropped us off back at my aunt's house. They had lost the power at the house. I remember it was very dark and scary, especially for a four-year-old. My grandmother, aunts, and uncles were in the kitchen. Candles had been lit all over. I went downstairs to the finished basement with my cousins. They started playing with a Ouija board. My cousin had snuck one in the house a few weeks prior. If anyone upstairs, especially my grandmother, had known about that, they would have been in so much trouble. We're Catholic, and she would have been furious. I've heard my whole life that you do not use those or even have them in the house. I don't remember much about them playing with it. My gram had called my name and not theirs shortly after they started using the board. For years after that, I would have extreme nightmares about that evening. And the nightmare, which was always the same, there'd be a man chasing me down that road, and just as I would get to the door of the house, I would try to get in, but it was locked. I'd look up in the bedroom upstairs and see my great aunt Pauline in the window, who had passed away several years prior. And the man who was chasing me would reach out for my shoulder. Then I would wake up. It may not sound scary, but on many nights I remember waking up screaming. Either my mom or my grandparents would run in my room to see if I was okay. In the dream, the man that was chasing me was called the innkeeper. I have no idea where that came from. For some reason, that was what I called him. Years later, as the nightmare still continued, I was about 10 at the time. I was riding in the car with my grandparent, just on a Sunday ride, as we often did, and we came to this small town. I know I had never been there before. As I looked out the window of the car, I recognized everything, like I'd been there before or dreamed about it. The feeling it gave me was just absolute terror, to the point where I started to feel sick. The small bridge we went over, the magic shop, the little florist, I recognized everything. The very worst thing I saw was back on the main part of the road. It was an inn or some kind of bed and breakfast looking place. It had a sign by the edge of the road that said "The Innkeeper" on the sign, the man holding a lantern. This looked just like the man that had haunted my dreams for all those years. I jumped in the front seat with my grandparents and started crying and told them I felt sick. I didn't even try to explain to them. I didn't really know how to. It was such a terrible, overwhelming, and scary feeling. To this day, I still can't figure out how I recognized everything when I had never been there before. Not really sure how all the events correlate together, but there it is. Sorry about the length of the story. I know it was long. Thank you so much for doing the show. It's great to listen to you guys at work.
That sounds just like what you talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Except she ran into it in real life.
Yeah.
You know, and part of me wondered, is that a place that she went to maybe as a very young child, mm-hmm. and didn't have any recollection of going there, but just recalled things she had seen? But it sure sounded like that they had never taken her there before.
Yeah, I mean, if she can confirm that she's never been there, mm-hmm. that's That's pretty spooky.
Yeah.
To have all of that just essentially conjured up in your mind and then, oh, hey, there it is. Mm-hmm. I remember several places that I went to as a very young child and didn't ever make the connection that I'd been there until I was older. I'd just be like, you know, when you're like 10 or 11, I started kind of making some of those connections. And I'd be like, gosh, I remember this place. And I could actually tell quite a bit. I mean, it's kind of shocking how much little kids can absorb.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even under 1 year old.
Yeah.
You know, if you took them around a place. And then what you can still recall then later. And it was a lot of supper clubs is what I remembered.
Okay.
Quite a bit of as a child and going to them like in a carrier or something. And then I'd go there like the next time I was like 10. And I can't tell you specifically where they were anymore, but I remember many conversations going, oh, I've been here before. No, Tony, you haven't. You know, or if you have, you were so little. You wouldn't remember this place. There's no way you'll remember this place. And then I'd be like telling, no, actually, if you go over there, that's there. And then in that room over there is this picture or this animal on the wall,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then around that corner is a video game or a pool table or something. You know, before I even had a chance to venture into those areas.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, how do you know this? How do you know that? Like, I've been here. But you were like one. Yeah, I know, but I remember. Yeah. And then some of those places, you know, I don't know, you know, if some of the weird places that come into my mind where it's like a town or a city or something, if some of that is based on just, you know, really early memories that then just kind of get reconjured up.
Mm-hmm.
And then it takes on a life of its own or what? I have like there's one place that's creepy. And I think it's a variation of the city of Wausau, Wisconsin, which I lived in for a while. And when you wander down the road in my dream, just outside of downtown, there's this creepy church. And it's like huge on the inside and dark red, you know, velvet and just, you know, it's like as creepy as you can get.
Uh-huh.
And I've explored it. I think it's like a church/antique shop in my dream.
Okay.
But nothing really horrible ever happens in it. It's just really, really spooky. And in reality, there is a church over in that area, but it looks nothing like that on the inside. So I don't know. In the other parts, there's like little bits and pieces that have changed in my dream as compared to what reality is. But I have little villages that I go to sometimes. You?
I don't visit places that I haven't been, or at least mm-hmm. I'm not aware that I do that. Most of the time when I dream, it's places that I've been to, and that's not uncommon at all for anybody.
Sure.
So I don't have any creepy stories like that.
Do they ever change, like in your dream, like from like what reality is to what your mind is producing of the area?
As far as I know, they don't.
No.
No. I mean, most of the time I'm dreaming it as the way I saw it. And I'm usually, when in my dream, the age that I was when I saw it.
Okay, that's interesting.
So it's just kind of like going back in time.
Are you astral projecting yourself as a little girl?
No.
Back to these places?
No, I'm just having vivid dreams, that's all.
Like, there's a little ghost girl running around here. No, it's just Jenny. She's an adult dreaming that she's a child. Back there again. That, I mean, that's interesting, you know, because we've talked about that a little bit with, you know, people projecting themselves that they're not dead. And I don't know. I think almost anything's possible now.
Yeah.
You know? Kayla writes in, so it started in third grade. Every morning, I got up, got myself ready, said goodbye to my mom, and then left. This particular morning, I walked out of the bathroom after brushing my teeth. Now, this was near the end of the school year, so it was bright in the morning. As I walked out, I noticed someone walking from the kitchen into my mom's bedroom. For a split second, I thought it was my mom, but she normally wasn't awake at this time. I tried to call her out, but my mouth was frozen and I couldn't look away. I was literally frozen in my tracks in front of my front door. When the figure walked by, the person looked like a female. She looked like a shadow, but I could see dimension. She had the body of my mom, but a much pointier nose, and she was taller. As she walked into my mom's room, she looked straight ahead. I caught no movement of the cheeks. She never blinked. As soon as she entered my mom's room, my real mom walked out. She stood in the exact place the shadow had been, and I could see her clearly, so it wasn't the lighting. A little later, either before or during fourth grade, we were watching Harry Potter. I'd left a light outside of the bathroom on so our hallway-type room could be seen. On the wall visible from the couch, there's a painting of a flower. As we were sitting there, we all heard a loud crash coming from that area. We looked away from the movie and saw the painting face down on the floor. My mom had a look of horror on her face. She said in a half-whisper, half-talk voice, "Someone took that painting off the wall." She said that it had come up, out, and fell down, as if someone had taken it off and dropped it. The next morning when I woke up, I was late. I'd done everything quickly. Oddly enough, my mom was awake this morning too. As I ran out of the bathroom, the door closed as if while I was running, I hit it. But I know I didn't. When the door slowly opened back up again, something told me to turn around. I looked back to the bathroom, started to walk in, and started walking to it. When I reached the door, a giant glass vase with seashells in it fell to the floor. Now, this would be normal if this case didn't weigh about 35 pounds. It hit the floor so hard that the 3-inch-thick glass broke. After both of the last two incidents, my mom says that we closed the doors too hard. It was just the house settling. Her views completely changed, and she says it's impossible that it was a ghost. Her responses seem very fake, and her eyes sort of glaze over whenever I ask. I just want to thank you for reading this. I needed to get this off my chest. I love this broadcast, and I listen to it every morning.
Okay, Mom knew something was going on in that house and was trying to just keep it calm and not tell anybody that she really knew it was haunted.
Everything's okay, dear. Nothing wrong. Eat your grilled cheese.
That would be so frustrating to me.
Do you like some more goldfish?
Yeah.
Yeah. When she knows, and it's one of those conversations maybe that you can have later in life and go, so, that house really was haunted, wasn't it? And then find out it was much more disturbing than you ever even knew.
That would make me really mad if I found out later that they were like, yeah, it was totally haunted. We just lied to you.
I think it depends how old the kids are at the time.
Yeah.
You know, you don't want to necessarily feed into that, even if it is real.
Right.
Yeah, because the kids are going to, if they have an active imagination, you're going to get them a combination of the paranormal shit going on and whatever else they're going to conjure up in their minds. So, did they say how old they were?
Third grade, fourth grade.
Okay, yeah. If we had a haunting, would you necessarily be like, oh, yeah.
It depends on which kid it is.
Shit's going down. Yeah.
Quite honestly. Really? It depends on, we have one that is very, very dramatic, and we have one that nothing seems to bother her.
Yeah, I could see one freaking out and the other one trying to, like, capture it.
Yeah.
Being like, not like put it in a proton pack or a...
I could see her saying, well, let's get Dad's proton pack.
I could see her doing that, too. But I could see her also, like, trying to capture evidence of it, too, is kind of what I was meaning. But I could see the proton. She probably had the proton pack on with a camera going and audio device and anything else she could conjure up.
Mm-hmm.
I got one!
But I think our little drama queen, I wouldn't probably tell.
That's probably a good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's people. Everyone's a little bit different.
Oh, they're so different.
Yeah. It's amazing. It'd be very interesting. I don't want any ghosts, so I'm not going to.
No.
But anyhow, 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost stories with us. Why don't you share the ghost story of the hotel that we were staying at and the ghost that was in it?
Why don't you share it?
Because I think you do it better.
I fill in the blanks better.
I've heard you share it now a couple times, and I think you did a pretty good job. Do you want me to tell the part that I... Because I kind of started it, and then you kind of finished up the rest as far as finding out what really...
Let's do that.
So, we're on Mackinac Island.
And we just celebrated our 5th anniversary, and we've been planning to go to Mackinac Island basically since we got married. That was our goal, was to go there for our 5th anniversary.
So
this has been in the works a long time, and yeah. we were so excited to go.
So we went there for one night, and we stayed at this hotel, and it was not the Grand. It was a much smaller, much more economical option, if you will. And we found it, and it's further off the mainland. I don't want to say the name of the place because I don't know how much they want to, you know, promote a ghost, but it's a bit of a carriage ride in. Into the, if you've ever been to Mackinac, you can only, there's no cars, there's no vehicles, there's bikes, and there's horses. And if you're on some properties, they have golf carts. But I have yet to ever actually ride in a golf cart. I've done bikes and the horse rides. So anyway, we get back there. It's about 3 miles in. And it was a very old house originally.
Mm-hmm.
Big house. Now
Victorian house.
Victorian house, now converted into a hotel of sorts, about what, 11, 12, 13, 14 rooms somewhere.
Something like that.
In that area. And get there, and we walk into the room and put our stuff down, and then we're going to walk down out to a little restaurant that was really close to it for a beverage. And as we're walking out, I said to Jenny, I said, so, do you feel any ghosts here? And I knew nothing about this place being haunted. I knew nothing about the history.
Me neither. You yeah. actually found it and booked it.
I didn't even know, honestly, when we got there, if it was legitimately old. Mm-hmm. I didn't know if, because the exterior looks like it's been redone a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know if this, because they do build new property there, if this was just like kind of a newer property made to look old, which mm-hmm. is kind of what you have to do on that island. Until we really got in there and we're like, okay, you can tell by the wood and everything that this is a
yeah.
place. And I said, so do you feel any ghosts? And your response?
I did. And I told him that I felt a female non-threatening presence,
mm-hmm.
almost like a caretaker type presence.
Mm-hmm.
Because it to me, I didn't describe this to you, but to me, the feeling I got, because we were up on the third floor, which I'm assuming back then was probably where the help did stay.
Mm-hmm.
But it felt like an invisible housekeeper was watching us.
Mm-hmm.
And there was nobody there. So that's kind of how that's how my spidey sense worked with that.
So that was what she said, and this is before we had heard anything else about ghosts or anything.
Mm-hmm.
So later in the day, I'm talking to one of the staff people there, and I said, so any ghosts in the hotel? And she said to me, yes, we actually have one. It's a female, and it's typically on the third floor, and there's a specific room that has a lot of activity in it, and it was not our room.
No.
But there's a specific room that lights turn on and off, and you know, your typical poltergeisty ghost things. Children are eaten, pets go missing, you know, heads go off. No, but just not anything mean, just you know, spooky.
Mm-hmm.
She told me that she believed it was like a lover's quarrel in like the early 19th century or so. Something where the home was built for the lover and or for the girl, and there was another man that she wanted to be with, and then she ended up going and killing herself in the orchard out back. Well, it turns out that's somewhat more of an urban legend than it is real,
mm-hmm.
but there was indeed a woman, and this is where the reality comes back in, because you looked it up then.
Yeah, I was just too curious. So after we got back to Wisconsin and we were back with the girls and everything, I was sitting there doing a little research and found out it was not exactly that story, mm-hmm. but it was a servant girl who went and killed herself in the orchard.
Mm-hmm.
So that would explain the female, not threatening, caretaker type feel that I felt.
So you were actually more on without knowing any of the story than the story I got from the person who actually worked there. Just by your feelings.
Just this time I was, yeah.
That was pretty good.
I don't like that it was that accurate, because it makes me wonder how many other times my feelings that I get are true. But it was kind of neat to be able to find out the history
mm-hmm.
after going there and feeling that. But that's what it just felt like to me. It was just like we were being watched by housekeeping staff that was not there.
Mm-hmm. But they did have extra toilet paper when you asked for it. You could just say, can I get an extra roll?
And here it came flying down the hall.
And it just showed up right there. It was amazing. That was that was a nice touch of the invisible housekeeper. But overall, I mean, it was a nice place. It was comfortable. I did not feel spooked out at all.
No.
But I was really amazed at just how much you were on with your story or how you felt.
Mm-hmm.
It's purely based on feelings as opposed to what the story was that I heard. But very interesting place. So we inadvertently got some ghosts.
It was fun.
On our anniversary trip. So we're like, oh, we have to share this now on the show. So there you go. There's a ghost story from us. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online to share your real ghost story. Henry writes in, I and my boyfriend at the time were looking for an apartment since we had decided to move in together. Soon enough, we found one. It was a relatively small place on the third floor of an old apartment building that used to be a dorm. It had a big balcony and all the hardwood floors and bathrooms had just been renewed. We moved in soon, and both of our mothers, we were both raised by single mothers, agreed to help. I couldn't help but notice my own mother seemed weird the whole time she was there, but thought nothing of it at the time. We had to place our sofa near the corner of the living room since the room was small, and we had to fit a lot of other furniture in the living room as well. I didn't often sit on the side of the sofa that was next to the wall, but when I did happen to do so, I always felt like I was cold and had to get a blanket or sweater. I often had a feeling I was getting sick or that I might have a fever raising while sitting on that spot. I just brushed it off at the time, obviously, since my boyfriend and house guest hadn't expressed any such feelings while sitting on the same spot. After about a year living there, we decided to get a dog, a Jack Russell Fox Terrier mix. Needless to say, the dog was very active and had a huge ego. He wasn't afraid of anything and acted like he owned the place wherever we took him. He wasn't, however, fond of one certain spot on the couch. He'd never voluntarily go near that side of the sofa. When someone would put him down on there after holding him, he'd bolt off, and while always being calm and completely still, when something was cutting his nails, if it happened to be in that side of the sofa, he'd struggle until it was impossible to do anything else except let him go. Soon after that, I'd encountered a neighbor while coming back from a walk, an older woman who I knew used to be the janitor of the building back when it was still used as a dorm. She cheerily asked me if our apartment was haunted. I laughed and asked why she'd ask that. I swear my stomach sunk a little bit as she started to tell me about a young woman, the exact same age as me at the time, who had lived there before us and had committed suicide by slitting her wrists open. I was skeptical at first since I knew she was prone to gossiping and inflating events. She claimed she had seen the dead body of the woman and continued to describe in detail how her body was discovered after about 2 months after she died from blood loss and how the body fluids, blood, and rot had completely ruined both the walls and the floor of the living room where she died. She beamed. Is that the right word? Bemoaned. Beamed. I don't talk about demons. That beamed sound better. Bemoaned how the cleaning service, how the cleaning services and renewing of the floors and painting of the walls cost a fortune. I suddenly remembered we had received a letter a while back that had a woman's name on it. I tried my best to keep my poker face, but I was very much creeped out as I started to connect the dots. I called our landlord that evening, but he assured me he had bought the place from a living person. I brushed it all off again. I reasoned that the neighbor had just been spinning a tail again, and that was it. This was until the standard lamp next to the sofa started to flicker occasionally. We didn't keep it on often. It was mostly me who used it, since I sometimes worked on my college assignments late at night after my boyfriend was already sleeping in the bedroom, so I was almost exclusively me who witnessed the flickering. I tried changing the light bulb, but it wasn't any use. I still told nobody about this from fear of coming off as over-emotional and sensitive. I just dealt with it and avoided the living room as whole as much as I could. Soon after I broke up with my boyfriend and moved to another city, it was about a year after that when I was having a phone conversation with my mother, and the old apartment came up. She asked me if I knew about the woman who had killed herself there. Apparently both of our moms had known about the incident, but didn't want to tell us since they thought it might affect our decision of renting the place. Now I realized why my mother had seemed so weirded out by the place. And come to think of it, despite of her being very close to both me and my then boyfriend, she only visited us once for about 10 minutes while we were living there. I still didn't tell her about what I had experienced, but laughed it off as usual. God knows I'm grateful she only told me all this after I had left the place. Even though I never felt any blatantly malicious feelings about the place, I can't deny it wasn't a very depressing time for me. Whether it is because of the bad relationship or the spirit of the woman who saw no other option but to end her life in one of the most violent ways possible. I don't know if I believe in ghosts, but if the spirit of the dead woman still resides in that apartment, I hope she'll find peace soon. The most prominent feeling about the place was always the feeling of utter despair. I always felt more sadness than fear about the possible ghost that had been stuck in between and couldn't find peace. Fortunately, I and my dog have not experienced supernatural events since and are currently living in a very nice apartment that is, so far, proven free of ghosts. Even though I enjoy hearing other people's tales about supernatural events, I sure don't enjoy experiencing them myself. I hope my story was coherent enough. English is not my first language, so I apologize for any grammar mistakes. I absolutely love your podcast, and I'm always looking forward to procrastinating my responsibilities by listening to you guys. We have an audience even up here in Finland. Please keep up the good work, and thank you so much for providing an outlet for people like me who might be uncomfortable with sharing their experiences with their family and friends.
Okay, that was gross.
We're all family and friends here.
Being left there for 2 months until somebody discovered her, to the point that you have to replace the floors and the walls.
Yeah, I just imagine you kind of get goopy after a while.
Oh, that's gross. I don't know that, I mean, living in a place where somebody passed away,
mm-hmm.
you know, like an older person who just died in their home and then you buy the home, that's one thing. But somebody who took their own life and then essentially decomposed there.
I just say got goopy.
I don't know that I could handle living in that location. I mean, granted, they replaced everything that needed to be replaced, but I don't think I could handle living there after that.
I wonder how much you have to replace. You know, obviously the floors and whatever is like in contact, but just the permeation of the walls.
Yeah.
You know, I would think the drywall would probably all have to go too. Even if like they weren't physically in contact,
mm-hmm.
just the moisture that would get into the air that's being exuded from that body, you know, it would be like just gross.
Yeah.
I can imagine there's a lot that would need to go. And it makes you wonder how many items that you find at like garage sales or resale shops and stuff that were in environments like that. This probably happens quite often. Not necessarily that they're finding people who killed themselves and then set, but you know, with you know, older folks,
uh-huh.
you know, especially ones where maybe the family's already passed on or they're just the only ones left. You know, that's fairly common.
Mm-hmm.
Or the family is, you know, far away and nobody's checking on them. Yeah, I'd imagine, you know, that happens quite a bit.
Yeah.
And then 2, 3 weeks, 4, 5 later, they find them. And, well, we'll have to get rid of this lazy boy here for sure. And probably the floorboards underneath this. But everything else in the room, let's have a sale.
Ugh. I wonder if the house down from my brother is going to be haunted now.
Hey, that was an interesting story.
Yeah.
And disturbing.
Yeah. So my brother rented a house and it's in a decent part of town and everything. And apparently he woke up the other day and there was emergency equipment or emergency personnel all over the place. And he's thinking, oh, crap, what happened? You know, he was looking for an accident or whatever. And
mm-hmm.
his neighbor was out in the yard. So he went out and asked his neighbor. He's like, what was going on? And the guy was like, well, you know, I called the authorities because I thought there was some kind of dead animal in that house over there. that's on the other side. So this is two doors down from my brother. I thought there was some kind of dead animal that, you know, maybe got in there or needed to be removed. Now, somebody had crawled in the crawl space under the house trying to steal copper. And something happened to him under there and he died. And I don't know how long he was under there, but to the point where he was stinking.
Karma is what happened to him.
Ugh.
Trying to steal the copper from someone's property.
Yeah. I mean, that's a real hard lesson to learn. So.
Yeah, I don't think you learn it at that point. I think you just kind of fail. It's done. It's a fairly unexpected death, you know, I could imagine that being a good recipe for a haunting.
Uh-huh.
Very, very much so. That's creepy. And I hate to be the person that has to then try and get that body out of there in one piece.
I bet you they cut a hole through the floor.
You think?
Probably.
Are they just trying to drag him out like, oh, you left an arm back there. Can you come?
I don't know. It depends on how long it's been there.
That's just yuck. And on that note, hey, pass the chili. 855-853-4802 is our phone number. Sherry writes in, so first let me start by saying I have years of stories to share, but for now, here's just one. When I was in eighth grade, my family had to leave our apartment that I grew up in. The move was very traumatic for us. On our last night there, all my family was asleep and I was awake, just sitting in my soon-to-be old room, thinking. I suddenly got a terrible feeling. I looked up to see three dark, shadowy figures in the four corners of the room growling and snarling at me. Growing up in church, I began to pray immediately, and when they went away, we spent the next 2 years living with my aunt before moving into another place. By this time, I was in 10th grade and had forgotten about the incident. One day, while we were unpacking, I decided to lie down. I remember hearing my mom tell me she was running to the store and would be right back. But 5 minutes later, my pillow literally closed around my face, suffocating me, and all I could hear was horrible laughter. I screamed Jesus and popped up, only to turn around to see my pillow slowly unfolding back into its normal shape. These occurrences continued until I was in the last month of 11th grade. This thing would keep me awake by grabbing my feet or smacking me every time I drifted to sleep. Sometimes it would just be there staring at me, menacing me. Once it took the shape of my brother at age 3, who was 18 and asleep in his room at the time. Another time it took the shape of a minister at my church. Finally, after a particularly bad week when it didn't let me sleep for about 3 nights straight, I broke down and told my mom. She, my brother, and I had a prayer circle that night, and for many years I didn't have the problem again until I turned 20. That's another story.
I want to hear the rest. It sounds like it was a mess and really dark, and that's a cliffhanger.
It sounds like something from a horror movie.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good one. Not a good experience to live through and have to. The idea of it taking the form of the brother at age 3 and then the pastor. And I'd love to hear more about that.
Yeah.
Those details, like what was the encounter?
Yeah.
Not just this happened, but what happened?
Yeah.
What was that experience like? Please do write in and elaborate on that, and let's hear the rest of the story as well. 855-853-4802 is our phone number here at Real Ghost Stories Online. Let's go to a caller at 855-853-4802. Hi.
So this is Kat from Stockton, California, and I called in about the demonic house, part one, where I was attacked by Freddy Krueger when I was 5. I escaped my stomach. So I have this really cool urban legend that me and some friends set out to debunk. I'm an EPP, and I was binge listening the last few days, and I heard that really great story about a bunch of friends going out to a church that ended up haunted, and one of the girls got possessed, and we had a similar situation. It was 4 friends. We drove out to this church on the outskirts of Stockton, and it was like something out of New Mexico or Arizona. It was very misplaced for Stockton. It was like an adobe style church. It was a Catholic church, had the big brass bells inside this huge adobe fence. And the legend went that you drive to the church and you drive going north to south. You drive in front of the church and then you turn around. You look at the statue, which is in the middle of the church, and then you turn around and you drive back past it, but you don't look this time. You don't look at the church or the statue. And then you turn around and you, the third time you drive back by and the statue has changed. And we're like, okay, well, this is just, you know, something that people tell each other just to freak them out. And, you know, nothing like that is going to exist in the little valley town of Stockton. I mean, that's something for, you know, Salem or something crazy. So we're like, okay, well, we have nothing to do this night. So let's just go out and totally debunk this crazy urban legend. So we get in my Camaro and start driving out to the middle of nowhere. It's down this desolate road, and it's just farm country on either side. There's no houses, just crops as far as you can see. And this church is in the middle of nowhere. It's the only thing on the street that goes for like 15 miles. So we're driving. My dad's a mechanic, so my car is in perfect shape. I've got this car up to 120 miles an hour. It runs flawlessly. It gets to maybe 4 RPM at the most. So we're driving along, and all of a sudden, my car starts, the RPM gauge starts going into the red. We're talking like 7, 8 RPMs now. And the speedometer starts going down, so we're actually slowing down, and the car is cutting out really bad. And I'm like, oh no, there's just the four of us. We're just teenagers. We don't know anything about cars. We're in the middle of nowhere. We have no cell phones. There was no such thing in the 80s. And I'm like, what are we going to do? We're in the middle of nowhere. There's no way I want to hike back to town. And what, you know, we're completely freaking out. This car is just acting crazy. We get down to 15 miles an hour. And I refuse to pull over, or I refuse to stop. There's no place to turn around because it's just a little two-lane road, and there's like, we're looking for like any place to just be able to turn around. But there was like ditches on either side for water irrigation, and we can't turn around. So I'm just driving, and I'm like, please let us just make it to the church, because I know that there's priests that live there. There's like 3 or 4 priests that stay on site, and they live there. So I'm like, just let us make it there, and at least they'll have a phone. So we get about a mile down the road, and all of a sudden the car kicks on, and it's just, it runs smooth. I've got the pedal to the metal at this point. Because, you know, I'm going 15 miles an hour with it all the way to the floor. All of a sudden, it takes off, just jumps into gear and takes off. Runs perfectly smooth for the rest of the 5 miles that we have to get to this place. I'm like, that is really weird. So we get to the church, and we drive by. Everybody writes down what they saw. I go to the end of the street, I turn around, and I come back, and even I'm looking out, you know, my passenger side window, so I'm not looking as I drive by, and then we swing back around and go from north to south again, and we drive by, and we're completely blown away. The statue has completely changed. So we pull over, and we're like, there has to be two statues. There has to be. And we all talk about it, and we all look at the notes that the others we have written down. We all four saw the same exact thing the first time, and the same exact thing the second time. The first time we saw a female angel in a flowing gown, holding a sword up to the sky, and in one hand, in her right hand she had a sword, and in the left hand she had a Bible, and it said Bible, and it had the cross on it, and it was closed. She had long hair. And it was just a typical angel with the wings. Her wings weren't really, really far out. They were just kind of on her back. But typical angel statue for a church. When we went back, it was a man, and it was a monk, and he was dressed in like a monk's outfit with the cord around his waist. There was no cord around her waist at all. He was bald, with a little bit of hair, you know, around like the horseshoe shape. He was holding a cross in his right hand, not a sword, and it was very clearly a crucifixion cross, nothing that would look like a sword. And in his other hand, he was holding a rosary, he was holding a hymnal with a rosary hanging down, not a Bible. And the hymnal was open, and the rosary was laid across it, like you see a lot of on horror movies and stuff, where a Catholic priest has the Bible with the rosary hung up across it. But it said hymnal on it, and we were like, this is unbelievable. So we're like, okay, this can't be the same statue. There must be two statues here. So we got out and walked all over the whole grounds, couldn't find another statue anywhere. And then a priest came out from nowhere, and we were all talking, and we're freaking out. We're just about to leave, and this guy comes up, and he's like, hi, how are you guys tonight? And we're like, great. And they're like, you know, how are you doing? And I'm good. And he's like, so you came out to check out our our blessed statue? And I was like, well, if that's what you can call it. And he's like, oh, yeah, a lot of people come by and touch the statue or whatever because it's been blessed. And I said, well, is there another statue around? Is there an angel statue? And he's like, no, this is the only statue we have. It was Saint Michael or somebody. And I'm like, okay, has it always been a monk by chance? And there's never been an angel statue here? And he goes, no, there's never been an angel statue here. Did someone say that there was an angel statue? And I was like, no. And he's like, well, I'm sorry, I don't know, you know. And I said, well, how long have you been here? And he's like, years. I've been here for years. And we're like, okay. And he's like, well, there's been stories that I've been told about, you know, the statue is unusual or something to that effect. And I'm like, unusual is putting it mildly. And he was very vague about everything. He was never, like, really answered our questions. He just stayed really vague. And so we're like, okay, thank you. And, you know, he said a blessing over us, and we turned to leave. And then I thought about something I was going to ask him, and it's been too many years to know what it was now. And I turned back to ask him, and he was gone. And we're like, where did he go? And it's a really big place. So he could have, you know, dodged into some little hiding place that he knows about that we didn't see anywhere. But when we turned around and he just vanished pretty much in the wide open, we decided to get in the car and take off. So on the way back, same thing. We got to about the same spot. The car starts trying to die. It's running really rough. And I'm like, oh, no, we've got to get home. We've got to get past this place. It's like 5 miles from this church. And so we get past that place, and we take off, and we get home, and we're like, never again. In all the years that I spent in Stockton, I've never been back to the church. I know several friends that have, but I guess I was told like 10 years ago they took down the statue, because I'm assuming because they had too many people driving by. And I've Googled earthed it, and it looks completely different. There's a little bit of the adobe gates left, but the whole church is the functioning church, and it actually has a daycare in it now, which isn't at all disturbing. But there's no statue, and there's no nobody knows what happened to the statue. So it was pretty weird, and we thought we were going to solve it, and we didn't. So anyway, I'll call in with my haunted balloon story next time. I had a Garfield balloon that tried to kill me. So that was that haunted balloon on the EPP the other night really gave me the creeps whenever I heard that. I was like, oh my gosh, I've got a story like that. So you guys are wonderful, and I appreciate you listening to my story. Bye.
I had a Garfield balloon once that tried to kill me.
Yeah.
I love that line.
That's great.
I don't think we ever heard. That's one I've never heard before. I had a Garfield balloon once. It tried to kill me. That was a really good story.
Yeah.
So do you think the statue was ever actually there?
I think there was a statue there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know about the clergy person that they ran into. Yeah. I don't know if it was a priest or not. But not real sure how much of it was really there and how much of it wasn't.
That's what I'm always wondering is, like, did the statue actually exist, or was the statue itself like the ghost?
Mm-hmm.
You know, something projecting that there. My only other thought was, well, could it be a statue where, like, one side looks like this and then the other side looks like something else? It'd be quite a difference.
Yeah.
But it sounds like they got to went and examined it pretty closely.
Right.
Probably would have caught that. But yeah, that's creepy. Creepy as hell. That was a very good story. Thank you for calling in and sharing that story with us. And yes, we'd love to hear the story about the Garfield balloon attempting to commit homicide.
Yeah.
That happens quite often. You got to watch where you get those Garfield balloons from. Get a bad one, all hell breaks loose. If you like the show, please consider supporting it, keeping us on the air, becoming an EPP. That's an extra podcast person. Sign up on the website, realghoststoriesonline.com. That's what keeps this thing going. Thank you in advance for doing that. Until next time, for Jenny Brewski, I'm Tony Brewski. Thanks for listening to another episode of Real Ghost Stories Online.